You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to he's an idiot.
Hello and welcome to episode 54 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. In today's episode, obviously, we have the Game 7 between the Cavs and Pacers. We also have Game 1 between the Timberwolves, the Jazz, and the Rockets. And we have a couple of playoff series to preview, such as the Sixers and Celtics, and, of course, the Cavs and Raptors. So let's get right into things with the Cavs and Pacers Game 7. And in the Game 7 preview, in a previous episode, I mentioned that LeBron had to be better than what he was in Game 5. And he was. He delivered big time and he controlled the tempo and the pace of the game whilst dominating from a scoring standpoint. Indiana recovered from a bad start and, led by Oladipo, were able to get back into the game. On yesterday's show, I talked about how bright the future would be for the Jazz once they build around Mitchell, and the same can be said for the Pacers and Oladipo. The Pacers cut the lead to 2 when LeBron began to cramp up at the end of the third quarter. And it was Kevin Love, their forgotten all-star, who came through, who became the focal point on offense and pushed the lead back out to 9. LeBron will get all the praise for the series win, and deservedly so. But without Korver, they lose this series. And without George Hill or Love, I don't think they take this game either. Now, there's something I need to talk about when I was watching this game, and I've noticed this throughout the series. But I kind of don't want to, but I need to. And I hate talking about the commentary. But my God, do the national carriers have a hard-on for James or what? And this is not just ESPN. TNT does this same nonsense as well. Everything he does is oversold. And any criticism towards him is instantly dispelled. Let me give you a couple of examples. He dunked on Sabonis in Game 6, and there was uncontrollable excitement. It was a great play, don't get me wrong. But there was uncontrollable excitement. But yet when he got dunked on by Oladipo, in a very similar situation, there were crickets. And then in today's game, he clearly ran over Sabonis. He lowered his shoulder. This is after he got a defensive rebound. Sabonis was just standing still. Lowered his shoulder right into the chest of Sabonis. And I think it was Mark Jackson. It could have been Mike Green or whoever. Or that they chime in without any replays. Oh, that's not an offensive foul. But when Turner fouled out, or that's a clear foul, and that was a much, much softer call than the LeBron call. And quite honestly, they're worse than the Cavs' local TV broadcasters. And it's their jobs, not the national broadcasters, but the local broadcasters, to really sell and promote the team. Now, I didn't want to bring politics into this, but I have to sort of bring up this comparison because they remind me so much of CNN reporting on Clinton and Trump, and it completely misguides casual fans. LeBron is a great player, and this is the frustrating part. And he's playing so well, there doesn't have to be blatantly biased reporting. It's not needed. And the fact that they continue to do that tells you all you need to know about the integrity of the industry. But that's something I wanted to get off my chest, and we can move on, and we can look at the Raptors versus the Cavs. And this series might not be a great series, but it could be defining in terms of careers and franchises and the direction that they go in the future. Is this the moment that Toronto finally ascends and knocks off a contender in the playoffs? Or do the Cavs continue their dominance in the Eastern Conference and also the Raptors themselves specifically? After Game 6 against the Pacers, I pointed out that Indiana started pressuring LeBron full court when he was bringing the ball up the court. So you can expect a heavy dose of that from Toronto. Also expect Ibaka to see limited time on him. And I bring that up because in last year's playoffs, Ibaka pretty much had to guard him. He was a primary defender. And Ibaka's a great defender, a great shot blocker, but he's not a great perimeter defender. And LeBron was just able to dance outside with the ball and shoot threes after, you know, he pretty much gave him the James Harden on any poor big man treatment. So don't expect that to happen. In fact, you may see Toronto go small and have Ibaka playing the 5. Now, you can forget the sell job that ABC or ESPN, the same company, just did in talking up the Pacers. They are not a great team. I have a lot of respect for them, but they're not a great team. They have a brilliant coach and players that compete, and they don't give up. Toronto is a far superior team to Indiana. Cleveland will have to play a lot better if they have any chance. And I'm not sure if LeBron can play all that much better, to be honest. I'm not sure if anybody in the history of the game can play a whole lot better than what LeBron has just played in the first round. Oladipo, at times, he did look unstoppable. And DeRozan is a much more complete player. So defensively, they need to improve there too. Now, I just said that LeBron can't play much better, but don't expect him to play much worse either, at least from an individual standpoint. If we're going from just the playoffs, Toronto has looked much better in closing out games in the last 5 minutes. That absolutely has to continue if they're going to win this series. This is one of those series where any outcome is possible, but I'll go with Cleveland in six. The games will be close, but I think they'll get an early road victory and defend their home court. Now, for the other series in the Eastern Conference, well, let's just get ready for some fireworks. How will Simmons and Embiid handle playoff basketball in Boston, though? I had questions about them handling the pressure of playoff basketball, but they went into Miami and won two games whilst looking like seasoned vets. I still have doubts about them going into Boston, but a better question might be, how will the Celtics handle Embiid? Horford is tough, but undersized. The same can be said for Baines. Now, of course, I'm talking about defensively. On the offensive end, they're completely different players. Horford is much better than Baines. Those are big questions that the Celtics need to address. A bigger question may even be, how reliable will Monroe be? Because if Monroe is reliable and does put forth a good effort against Embiid and boxes him out and doesn't get into foul trouble, we could see him getting a lot more minutes, and we could even see him starting alongside Horford, and they could go big to counter Horford. The other question that needs to be addressed is the health of Jaylen Brown. He was the Celtics' best player last series when he was healthy, and they need him to produce offensively. If that burden falls onto Rozier and Tatum, that's asking too much of them. We might see those guys, Rozier and Tatum, of course, carry the offense for a game or two, but you can't expect them to carry it for an entire series up against a team as good as Philadelphia. Now, Simmons has been incredible, but how he responds to the Celtics' full-court pressure defense could impact his effectiveness. We might see Fultz getting more minutes to help them break that press if he struggles. Both teams have great role players and coaching. So it will come down to the stars. And with Brown's hamstring combined with no real answer for Embiid, I think there are more questions surrounding Boston than Philly. And the rebirth of a great rivalry starts with the 76ers winning in 5 or 6 games. And let's finish up with talking about the Rockets and Jazz. I nearly forgot about you. It was nearly Christian Leitner's moment in the when the 92 Dream Team were inducted to the Hall of Fame, and Magic Johnson gave a toast to every single player, but he forgot Christian Leitner, which is kind of ironic. And then at the very end, he goes, "Oh, you'd think I forgot about you." He clearly did forget. If you've seen that video, you know he forgot that. Anyway, let's go to the Rockets and Jazz. It was a very forgettable game, in my defense. And for the first time in the playoffs, outside of the third quarter of Game 4 against the Timberwolves, we saw the Rockets' offense in high gear. When this does happen, there's not a whole lot Utah can do to slow them down. The Rubio injury is massive to the Jazz. I didn't even realize how serious it was, but it is a huge blow to them. Not only is he an underrated defender, but he's a veteran point guard that helps the Utah offense flow. The Jazz have no defensive answers for the Rockets when they get going, but with Rubio, they can, for a limited periods of times at least, match them on the offensive end. We'll also see the value that he brings to Mitchell's game, because Rubio has impacted and helped him develop. That can go both ways, because what we might be discounting as well is the fact that Mitchell may have also made sacrifices for Rubio to control the offense. Now, if the ball's in Mitchell's hands a little bit more, we'll see how good he is. I know it's early. We know how good he could become, but we'll see how good he is right now. Now, this game was an obvious blowout, but keep in mind that Utah lost Game 1 against the Thunder in similar fashion. But they made great adjustments to take 4 of the next 5, and it took a historic comeback for them to even lose one of those games. So they were on the verge. They, by all intents and purposes, should have won 4 straight. Now, I'm not saying the same will happen here, but you can expect this series to be much closer than the first game, even with Rubio being out. Now, this is going to be a very short podcast, because I'm actually in a hotel room. I do have to, I've got a lot to do today, so otherwise, obviously, I would, you know, spend some more time and answer some questions and go a little bit further in depth with some topics. But what we're going to do is I have an early meeting tomorrow. It's going to go all day as well. So what I will do is I'll quickly, before I go any further, tomorrow's games are Philly versus Boston in game one. I've got Philly winning that. I've got the Raptors winning against the Cavs in game one. And I've got the Warriors over the Pelicans in game two. So the Warriors have a 2-0 lead. Philly and Raptors also emerge with early leads in their series. But what we'll do tomorrow is, obviously, I won't be able to go through those games and reviews. So I'll do a pure mailbag episode. I'll be recording that tonight. So if you've got any questions, send them through. I've already got enough right now to do probably about 3 hours worth of content. But I'll be going through questions tonight. If you've got any other questions, just send them through and they may make it for tomorrow's episode. If not, they'll probably make it to another one. And that will be released around the same time. And then the day after, we'll have probably about six games to go over and recap those. So that's how it's going to be for the next few days. And I appreciate your patience. And once again, I apologize that this is such a short podcast episode. But thank you very much for joining me, and I'll catch you in the next episode.